We are being hypnotized by people like this. Newsreaders, politicians, teachers, lecturers.
We are in a country and in a world that is being run by unbelievably sick people. The chasm between what we're told is going on and what is really going on is absolutely enormous.
Oh yeah, dude. There's some Nephilim shit. It's like we all know what's going down, but no one's saying shit. What happened to the home of the brave? These motherfuckers, they controlling us now, and no one's talking about how they made us try to be slaves. And everybody's just walking around, head in the clouds, and won't awaken to a dead in the grave. But then it's too late, we need to be ready to raise up. Welcome to the end of day. Everybody is slaves, only some are aware.
Welcome back, everybody, to a very special episode of Nephilim Death Squad. I am David Lee Corbo, a.k.a. The Raven. That is Top Lobster. And today, for a special sort of Dissecting the Book of Revelation series, we welcome back Ed Mabry. Ed, how are you, my man? It's been not that long, but it's good to see you again.
Hey, it's great to see you guys, too. I was rocking out to your music, your intro music. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me back, guys. I'm really excited about this.
Absolutely, yeah. So you've been someone that's been on our mind for a while, like ever since the episode ended. I'm like, gotta have him back on, but it's like, you don't want to call that girl after the first date right away. So like, let it exactly. Sit, let it sit. And then I saw you finishing. I'm a couple episodes into your Revelation series. I'm like, this thing is great. Thanks. I want more people to see it, but I also want you to introduce our audience to it, because, you know, people are fickle. So I said, maybe I could trick Ed to come in and talking with us again about this.
Oh, now I get it. Okay.
He knocked it out the park. Me. Yeah. So yeah, this will be some kind of a series. We don't know how long it's going to take, but I want you to run through what you've been running through on your show and hopefully give us a better understanding of this book. It's my favorite book in the Bible, and yeah, I don't understand it.
Yeah, totally. So I've done, well, I'm on my last episode, and I've done 60. I don't plan to do that many for this show. That's a lot. I think I'm going to try to make it maybe 15-ish. We'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll let it do what it does, but it won't be 60. I'm going to be condensing it for this audience, because, you know, number one, I don't want to take over your entire show. And secondly, you know, you can go to my channel, faithbyreason.net. That's my website. You can go to a YouTube channel, also Faith by Reason, my Rumble channel, all the same. You can go there and you can do the deeper dives. I go deep. Some of these are an hour long or even a little bit more than that. But I want to really do highlights and just kind of whet your appetite for what this book is all about. And like you said, Top, it's your favorite book. It is mine, too. I love Revelation, even from the time I first became interested in the Bible and in biblical literature and the Christian philosophy and all that stuff. It's a great book because it's so dramatic. I mean, there's so much incredible stuff happening. You know, you have these visions of Jesus, of the throne room, of God the Father. You've got these four horsemen riding around. You've got the Antichrist, the Mark of the Beast. You have, the rapture, which is probably the most controversial
subject in
all of eschatology, whether you believe there is one or when you think it happens. And I get into that. I promise whatever your belief is about the rapture, my position is going to piss you off. So just be ready for that. You got the Mark of the Beast. You've got these 100-pound hailstones, rivers and oceans turning to blood. Then, you know, Armageddon, the return of Jesus. There's so much dramatic. This is probably the most dramatic book in the Bible easily. And because I believe that most of it's happening in the future, some don't. We'll talk about that a little bit today. It's mysterious. It's controversial. It's a little mysterious because it hasn't happened yet. There's a lot of guesswork, a lot of speculation. And that's what makes it such a fascinating book, but it's also what makes it a difficult book for people to comprehend.
You know, absolutely. When I first got into conspiracies, one of the very first things I did as a young man was I went to my local church and I asked the pastor for a Bible, and he was very eager to give me one. Little did he know that I wanted to skip through the entire thing and get to the end and try to read Revelations. Didn't understand a lick of it, like not even the smallest amount of it. I'm really excited to be doing this with you. I guess take us wherever you want, in regards to the starting point here
sure.
Settle in.
So, I wish I don't have a ton of time today, unfortunately, so this is really just going to be a primer. When we do this next, the next week and following, you'll have my full time hour and a half, 2 hours to do a deeper dive, but this is really going to be like a commercial for what we're doing, what I'll be talking about in Revelation. So the reason Revelation is so difficult to understand is because I think that we don't always come at it with the right perspective. I think we're looking at it from the perspective of, you know, what we personally think the Bible is. And most of us think the Bible is a story about us. We think it's a story about humanity and you know, our struggle against evil and how to be better and our history and things like that. And there are, that is in the Bible, you know, just history in the Bible. There's, you know, guides on how to behave, how to please God, so forth and so on. But the truth is, the Bible is Yahweh's story. It's him telling us his story about what he wants so we can get to know him better. So if you understand the divine perspective of Revelation, it's going to help you understand it a little better. And that divine perspective is that this is the culmination of everything, of the entire biblical narrative, where God finally gets what he wants. And what he wants at the end is what he wanted at the beginning, which is the state of Eden. The Edenic state is humanity being in perfect provision and perfect purpose and in perfect intimacy with the spiritual realm, with God, with Jehovah. We, you know, Adam and Eve had that, but then the rest of the story is us screwing up, the fallen angels, the Elohim screwing up, and the rest of the story from basically Genesis chapter 3 to the end of Revelation is everything that Jehovah God does to get us back to what he wanted in the first place. So the reason Revelation is so important to understand is that if the Bible ended without Revelation, this story would be a tragedy. Because, I mean, look at what happened. You know, original sin, we keep screwing up. God floods the world to get rid of the Nephilim. Then he, you know, then you have Babel. Then you have him trying to redeem the world through Israel, culminating with the advent of Jesus, who, you know, according to Christian philosophy, which I obviously believe, you know, he died for our sins. He redeemed us, and things were going great for a few decades. The new church was going great. The book of Acts talks about that, but then things start going downhill. And the more people who come into the church, the more the church becomes corrupted, to like half the New Testament is just, you know, books by the Apostle Paul and some of the other apostles just admonishing people, saying, hey, here's where you're screwing up. Here's how to get back on track. So it didn't even last 100 years. So it looks like if not for the book of Revelation, Jehovah never gets what he wants. But this book is about the last stage of him getting what he wants, which is getting rid of spiritual evil, getting rid of all evil, and then returning us to an Edenic state. So what I like to do is, when we start, obviously you're going to start with the first chapter, but just looking at the first few words, which gives you the perspective of the book. And the first words are the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave to him. So first thing is, and this is kind of just a little pet peeve of mine, it's not the book of Revelations. It's a book of Revelation, singular. It's the revelation of, it's a singular revelation of Jesus, which God gave him. So what we have here is, go ahead.
I had to check my spelling. I was like, oh, I hope I didn't mess that one
up. I was wondering, I didn't realize we could see it.
Look, my dad is a pastor, and he calls it the book of Revelations. I'm like, Dad, come on. You got to do better than that. That's the second word in the book. It's the revelation you got. But it's a minor pet peeve. But what I want people to understand is that this is not a book of a bunch of revelations. It's not about that. It's about a singular revelation. It's basically God revealing Jesus to Jesus. So we're basically, what we're doing is we have the opportunity to eavesdrop on a conversation between the eternal Father and the eternal Son. Now, some may ask, if you're of the Trinitarian point of view, which I am, where we believe that, you know, Jesus and God are one, how could God know something? How could the Father know something that the Son doesn't? But keep in mind that, yes, Jesus is the eternal Son, but there was a time 2,000 years ago where he temporarily gave that up and he became a human being. He was a baby. When he was a baby, he didn't, you know, come out of Mary's womb, you know, talking physics. He was a baby, cried and peed and pooped like any other baby. It says in the book of Luke that he grew in grace and favor with God and men. So he started getting information, and he was getting information from God. So this is kind of the culmination of that, where when he ascends to heaven, God gives him in computer terms a download of all this information. And the next verse says that he's Jesus, he sent and signified it or rendered it into signs through his apostle, John, I'm paraphrasing, his apostle John, to be sent to the churches. So this conversation between Jehovah and Jesus is intended to be heard and understood by the churches, but it said he signed up, he signified it, he rendered it into signs so that we can understand it. And that's another reason why this book is tough to understand, because there's a lot of signs, a lot of symbolism, but it's explained either in Revelation or, interestingly, other parts of the Bible. So that's the second reason why it's difficult to understand. One is because it's in the future, a speculation. Secondly, because it's in eternal language that we don't get. And I think that eternal language is a story. Stories are eternal language. Hey, think about it. I mean,
a question again.
Yeah, please.
When Jesus told this story to John, when in Jesus's life was this?
Well, at this point, Jesus had already ascended to heaven.
Right, so after he comes back.
So he ascended to heaven in about 33-ish AD. The book of Revelation was written around 95 AD. So this is a vision that John gets. So the apostle John is, he actually the last living disciple. This is, you know, towards the end of the first century. All the other disciples have been martyred by this time by either the Roman church primarily or by the Pharisees, who were the Jewish religious leaders at the time. John was the only one left. He was in exile on an island called Patmos, which is in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea near the island of Crete. So it's like basically a penal colony. And while he's there, he gets a vision of Jesus, which is in the first chapter. And that's when Jesus gives him the visions that he writes down, which composes the book of Revelation.
Wow, that's incredible. It's incredible to think of it. That's why the book kind of like stands out to so many people, because in today's day and age, we're talking about, we talk about being visited by aliens and things like this all the time, but this is very much the same phenomenon. And when we like to say that the aliens are just a rebrand of something spiritual and coming from the other side, this same phenomenon that you're describing right now is just coming from directly from God. So how incredible must that have been?
Right. I mean, it is extraterrestrial. I mean, if you look at the definition of extraterrestrial, it just means extra, meaning above or beyond, terrestrial, meaning our Earth. So this is something just beyond Earth. So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, some biological entity from the planet Xenon 12. It means a communication from an entity that is not of this physical realm. So I'm with you. I believe that the so-called alien phenomenon, it's these are spiritual beings. Well, for better or worse. And I think if you look at a lot of the alien phenomenon, it looks like it's for the worse. So I think that they're not communing with biological entities from another planet. I think they're communing with other spiritual entities. But in this case, the spiritual entity that the Apostle John was communicating with was Jesus. So he was given, this vision. So I just want to say the third thing that makes it difficult to understand for a lot of people is because you need to understand the rest of the Bible in order to understand Revelation. And I'll point that out as we go along with this series. But if you don't understand, the book of Daniel, the book of Isaiah, Genesis, I mean, all the rest of it, you aren't going to get it, because it referenced, just like a good conclusion to any book, it references all the main points that happened previously. The Nephilim are in there. We're going to see them when we get to chapter 6. We're going to see a return of Nimrod, in my opinion, when we get to the chapter 13. So, these are folks in Genesis. I think that the way the earth is going to be very similar to the days of Noah. Jesus himself promised. He said that as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be at the time of my return, the second coming. And what were things like in the days of Noah? The Nephilim. That was the most, he was speaking to a well-versed Jewish audience in the first century. And when you say the days of Noah, they think, oh, the Nephilim, these giant weird creatures that were tormenting everyone. So that return is happening. But if you don't understand that, then you're not going to get it.
The last time we spoke about the speed of light and how it's diminishing as time goes on. And then we also touched on something like whether we think there would be an awakening or a revival before this happened. And we kind of like, maybe. But as you're saying that, if things will be as they were in the times of Noah, then the speed of light has to speed up a little bit in order for us to see these supernatural things. So a great revival or something that draws us closer to God in a way kind of does make sense in order to kick those things off. And then it gets weird.
Yeah. Well, that could possibly be. Here's one thing that I was, and I know we're getting off topic a little bit, but it's because something I've been talking about with a friend of mine about, you know, the way things happen towards the end of time, where the speed of light is slowing down, but it also seems like time seems to be speeding up. There's something that Jesus says that, you know, unless those days were shortened, the time of this, you know, this end time, there would be no flesh saved, like no one would survive. Well, how do you shorten the days? Well, you're not going to make, you know, if it's going to be 7 years, we talk about what that means, a 7 year tribulation that is part of Christian eschatology. Well, it's got to be 7 years. He can't say I'm going to shorten it to 6.5. No, otherwise he'd be, you know, stating a mistruth. But it could be that time is speeding up. Could it be that as light slows down, time speeds up? Why? Because time is decay. It's chaos. So as light, which is, you know, order, we talked about this last time, instability decreases, then naturally chaos is going to increase. And as chaos increases, decay increases. That's the second law of thermodynamics. So that may be that time is speeding up. And how would you be able to tell that since we're in time? I would say that, ask yourself, do you feel like it takes you, like, you know, you don't have enough time to do the things you used to do?
Yep.
Yeah.
Look at COVID. And anytime somebody brings something up, I'm like, I don't remember anything since COVID because it's all been a blur.
Look at the news cycle, right? It's like we used to laugh about how the news cycle would be like, in a month, this is going to be forgotten. Dude, in 2 days now, things are forgotten.
In
3 hours, and we're on to the next thing. The cycle is so quick. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So the thing with Revelation and the reason that I think it can be understood is because like it says at the very beginning, it's intended to be. Are we going to know everything? No. Do I know everything? No. There are some areas where I don't know, and I will tell you that where I don't know things, but I'll give you my best guess. I mean, there's a place, like, for example, there's in chapter 8, you have these demonic locusts that come out of the abyss, and it says that, and this is one of the trumpet judgments, it says that they'll be tormenting men, these giant scorpion-like locusts, they'll be tormenting men, and it says men will seek to die, but they won't be able to. I'm like, I don't understand that fully. How can you want to die and not be able to? Why can't you jump off a building? Why can't you shoot yourself?
Right.
I have some theories about it, but I'm not sure exactly. But I'll tell you that it's theoretical. But there's also, I think, in chapter 14 or 15, where it says that, you know, seven thunders utter their voices, and John is about to write it down, and God says, no, don't write these down. Seal these up till the end times. So what do those thunders say? I don't know, because it hasn't been revealed yet. So all that to say is, there are areas that are going to still be mysterious, but we're still going to do the best of to our ability to understand it. And, you know, and that's what the perspective that I take. So the divine, just to wrap up the divine perspective, I'll let you guys give your thoughts. The divine perspective is that this is a conversation between the Father and the Son. It's a God revealing Jesus's ultimate destiny to him, and that ultimate destiny is going to end with a return to Eden. So if you look at Revelation from that standpoint, it'll be much easier to understand, and not from our standpoint. I mean, I get people all the time asking me, where do you think America is in prophecy? Like, that's an irrelevant question. We're not in Bible prophecy for a couple reasons. Number one, United States didn't exist when these books were written. And secondly, the story isn't about the United States. I mean, I love our country. I think it was founded on great principles, but we're not the focus of God's plan. The focus of God's plan is redemption through Israel, through his Messiah. So that's why the Bible is so focused on Israel, not because God doesn't care about China or Russia or Africa. It's because he's traveling his story, and his story is about the redemption of mankind and return to Eden. And that is done through Israel and through the King of the Jews, who is Jesus.
You know, one of the things you said when we started this that I found really potent was this idea that the book of Revelations, without it, this would actually be a story of tragedy.
Revelation.
Thank you.
Don't make me go over there, David.
Don't make me add an S to this title. But that is completely in juxtaposition to what people view the book of Revelation as, which is this doom and gloom story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As somebody who wasn't raised Christian or with any religious background or knowledge or anything like that, my peripheral knowledge of the Book of Revelation was that it was this almost horror story.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear you say that is something that I knew on some level, but I hadn't been reminded of that as potently. It's like without the Book of Revelation, this is actually a sad story. Yeah. And that it's the best part. It's the part where God gets what he originally intended for us. And so yeah. I just kind of find that beautiful because it is the public perception of it is not that, I would say.
Yeah, think about like your favorite action movie. What happens towards the end? You know, the good guy and the bad guy have their final battle. You know, the good guy is getting his butt kicked for a while. Then he you know, finds it within himself to beat up the bad guy. He finally wins. He goes to his you know, the princess, the love of his life, whoever he is, and they live happily ever after. That's what Revelation is. It's that final fight, which is brutal. But what happens after the final fight? The good guy wins. He gets his prize. He gets the love of his life or whatever he was fighting for. And then, you know, it's all happiness and roses. So that's what it's about. So, yeah. So if you focus on both of those parts, and you'll see, yeah, it's going to be brutal. But understand this. This is really important. And when you get to all the cataclysmic judgments, those were not intended for human beings. God did not intend for humanity to be judged. He only intended to judge spiritual evil. His intention was for all of us to be with him. And then, you know, he judges all the fallen Elohim and the Nephilim and all that stuff. However, if you choose to be on that side, if you reject his provision for you, then, well, you know, it's like if you're in a house that's on fire and someone says, hey, get out of the house. And you're like, no, I'm going to stay here. Well, it was their will for you to get out of the house, but you decided, nope, I'd rather stay here. Well, okay, you're gonna burn.
So Ed, the idea of judgment, to me, when you say judgment, it means that there will be a trial. And if you're putting someone on trial, it means that there could be innocence or guilt. And if we're talking about the Nephilim and the Elohim, fallen angels, is there anything like that for them? Because I know I saw that movie Noah, where it's a lot of it is like bullcrap and it's subversive. Yeah. But our friend Joel Thomas came on. He talks about the good Nephilim and possibly there being some good Nephilim fighting along the side of David and the mighty men and so on and so forth in different, you know, examples throughout the Bible. What are your thoughts on that?
Honestly, I haven't read anything about good Nephilim because everything that I've read in the Bible, and I'm not sure, I'd love to, I have to listen to that show and see what his source material is, but in the biblical text, they are 100% evil because they're not the creation of God, because they were not his creation, because they have no connection to him. Now, granted, so you can have even an unbeliever, an atheist can still do good things. I mean, I know several atheists who are very nice people. They just happen to not believe in anything spiritual. But they still have a spiritual connection because if you didn't have a spiritual connection, you could never even come to God. The Nephilim were born without that. So if they're the progeny of fallen angels and, you know, human women, then they're not a creation of God. And so they have no connection to his goodness. So, I mean, I could be wrong on that. I'd love to see what his source material is.
I'm not married to the idea. I'm just floating the idea.
Yeah, no. I'm open to listening to anything, but on the surface, I would say I think that's incorrect. But I don't want to dismiss anyone's opinion before I hear it, because I think that's really the worst thing you can do is dismissal without any type of analysis. But it's great that you mentioned the term trial, because there is a trial, but it actually starts in the Book of Daniel. And I'm going to talk about that when we get to chapter 4, when we get to the vision in heaven, where, because the first three chapters are of Revelation are based on earth. It talks about the seven letters to seven churches, which is amazing stuff. And then you get to chapter 4 and it shifts to heaven. And in heaven, you get the conclusion of a trial that began in the Book of Daniel. And in that trial is where the fallen Elohim, the fallen angels, tell their plan, because there's a spiritual law where you have to speak what you're going to do in one realm so that it manifests in the other. I think I talked about this. Maybe I may have talked about this on this show. I know I talked about it on the Sam Tripoli show. And so they make their statement of what they're going to do and how they're going to make the world theirs. And then Jehovah says, okay, well, I've heard you, and now I can rightly render justice to you by giving the world over to the Son of Man, who is one of the titles of Jesus. And so that trial begins there, and it ends in Revelation chapter 4. And actually, yeah, Revelation chapter 4 and 5. So there is a trial of spiritual evil, and they're found guilty.
That's such an incredible rule. It's like it makes me think of like old-timey battle where the British would line up in front of each other and just like fill their muskets.
Yeah,
like,
fill their muskets and yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by HeavensHarvest.com. In times of uncertainty, peace of mind is priceless, and Heaven's Harvest has your back with the highest quality emergency survival foods and heirloom seeds. They have survival food kits for emergencies that last a week all the way up to 12 weeks. Choose from protein kits, entree kits, breakfast, fruits and veg, and even organic kits for you bougie survivalists. Don't forget to check out their heirloom seeds and choose from their vegetable kits, artisan seed kits, superfood kits, and more. They even have water filtration units. Build your stockpile without breaking the bank by visiting HeavensHarvest.com and using promo code Nephilim at checkout. That's promo code Nephilim, NEPHILIM, for 5% off your entire order.
Yeah, there's nothing deceptive about it. It's like, this is what I will do to you if you allow it. And then you go, okay, and then they shoot you, and you're like, damn, kind of gangster.
Yes, I'm going to do a whole episode on that because I think it's really fascinating going back to the book of Daniel and seeing how this works, because it not only sheds light on what's going on in Revelation, but it also helps you understand the how things work in the spiritual realm. And that's another thing I want to make clear before I head off, is that not only do I look at this from the standpoint of that divine perspective, I also look at it from the spiritual standpoint. I mean, I look at it from what's happening in that realm, because that's really going to help us understand more. Hmm. But before I get going, I think I have like, what, about another 15 minutes or so. I've talked about the divine perspective. I also want to talk about men's perspective, because, you know, because this is such a popular book, Revelation, because it has so much going on, there are tons of commentaries on it. I mean, many, many pastors, you go to YouTube, there's like hundreds and hundreds of Bible teachers who will talk about end times, talk about Revelation. So there are three major categories of man's perspective on this. I mean, there are hundreds of people who, if you talk to 100 people, you get 100 different opinions about it. But there are three major categories that man's perspective falls into. There's the allegorical point of view, there's the historist or preterist point of view, and there is the futurist point of view. So the allegorical point of view, as the name would applies, people who fall into this category believe that Revelation is allegory, that all the stuff happening, you know, water's turning to blood, hailstones falling, demonic locusts and horsemen and all this stuff, it's not literal. They don't take it literally. It's just a symbol for something else. A lot of secular historians believe that the Apostle John was basically a Jewish patriot who was writing this book as a treatise against the Roman Empire, but he couldn't write it directly. Otherwise, you know, it couldn't be distributed. So he had to put everything in the symbol. So the demonic armies are a symbol of the army of Rome, though the Antichrist is a symbol of the Roman emperor. And, you know, the final battle of good and evil at the end is basically when, you know, Jesus will triumph and will free the nation of Israel. Because again, they don't believe that Revelation is supernatural. Another group that holds that allegorical point of view is the Catholic Church. Not necessarily Catholic people. Now, maybe there are probably Catholic people who do take Revelation maybe more literally and seriously, but the official position of the Catholic Church is that this is allegory, that it's not, that this is kind of a symbol of the eternal battle between good and evil. Which, okay, if that's the case, then it basically makes Revelation worthless, because, okay, it's just a story about symbols and good and evil fighting. It's a nice story, like Lord of the Rings or something, but it doesn't give it any impact on your life. And also, that allegorical point of view is tacitly promoted by most mainline churches, mostly because most of them don't teach Revelation. So if you don't teach something that you know is in the Bible, then you're just basically saying it's not real. And I think they don't want to teach it because it's uncomfortable. There's some uncomfortable stuff that happens. I mean, there's a lot of death. There's a lot of destruction. And, you know, if you preach Revelation a lot, then you maybe those, you know, the offering plate doesn't get as full on Sundays and you're not able to afford your Bentley anymore if you're a mega pastor. So,
oh boy.
You're right. Yeah, you can't afford to fly in that private jet if you aren't getting the donations, and you only get the donations if you talk about peace and love, and Jesus is going to give you a bunch of money if you believe hard enough. Sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent.
If you don't explain Revelation accurately through a spiritual lens, and then you can't explain the rest of the Bible, which is why I was never. Most people are interested in the book because of that, and it's why I was never really interested, especially in the Old Testament. It kind of was like, this stuff is boring. You're teaching me, I guess maybe they're teaching me allegorically, but when you start looking at it, you're like, oh my God, like, what are you really telling me? This book is crazy.
Yeah. So obviously I don't take that point of view, the allegorical point of view. The other point of view is the historist point of view or the preterist point of view. And there, that's the belief that most of Revelation has already happened, that from chapter 1 to about chapter 20 took place in the first century. You can go to faithbyreason.net and you can get into all this. I spend a whole episode on each one of these. But basically they go to Matthew chapter 16, where this is their entire point of view is based on, their entire doctrine is based on this one verse where Jesus says, he's talking to a group of his followers. And he says, there are some of you who are standing here who will not taste death until they see me coming in my kingdom. And they took that to mean, okay, well, Jesus means that the people are going to be alive to see his second coming. But the problem with that is that when you're using the English translation and you don't, you know, stay cognizant of the idea that the Bible was not written in English. It was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic. It was translated. So you need to look at the original language. And what Jesus actually says is, there's some of you here who will not die until you see me appearing in my royal authority. Now, if that is the second coming, then they have a point, because they said some people will live to see it. So the preterists take that to mean that all the events of Revelation must have happened in the first century. The only thing that was cataclysmically happening to Israel at that time was in 70 AD, the siege of Jerusalem. So they basically say that all of Revelation, the tribulation period, all the judgments happened in 70 AD at the siege of Jerusalem. Problem is, none of that stuff actually happened. You know, all the hailstones didn't fall, the locusts didn't come out, rivers weren't turning to blood.
Today's episode is brought to you by PurgeSuddenly.com. What if I told you that more people have died from parasites than have ever died from war? What if I told you that cancer, multiple sclerosis, acne, rosacea, and rheumatoid arthritis can all be treated with parasite medication? Rid your body of these all too common parasites. Purge Parasite Cleanse is made with ingredients like zinc, carrot powder, garlic, black walnut. We're talking all natural ingredients that are good for you. Or try their Digestimes to promote healthy gut bacteria and aid in digestion. These, as well as any other products on PurgeSuddenly.com, can be purchased with promo code Nephilim, NEPHILIM, at PurgeSuddenly.com.
No, the Antichrist didn't set himself up in the temple to be worshipped. None of those things happened. So they kind of have to allegorize it as well. But the quick solution to the preterist point of view is that instead of waiting till 70 AD, use Occam's razor. Look at the simplest explanation. The very next chapter, in chapter 17, is the transfiguration of Jesus. He goes to Mount Hermon. He's transfigured before a group of his disciples, a subset of those who were there. And he was transfigured. He appeared in his royal glory. So it happened. It didn't happen in 70 AD. It happened in the next chapter. But preterists believe that. They're a very small and very vocal group, but they believe it. And they also believe that Jesus returned to earth in 70 AD, but I guess no one decided to jot that down anywhere. But anyway, obviously I don't take that point of view. And the final point of view is one I take, which is the futurist point of view, which is that most of Revelation from chapter four to the end of the book hasn't happened yet. Why do I believe it hasn't happened yet? Because it hasn't happened yet. So
you know what, so I'm realizing, yeah,
that's the point of view I take.
I'm realizing, like, as Ed's talking, and I'm like totally enamored with this whole idea, and I'm so excited to go down this path that we're gonna, you know, end up doing this sort of series. And I'm like, oh my God, we need to do like a Bible study. Like, we need to, I'm realizing this in real time. I'm like, we can't.
We've had people in our Telegram do they've been trying to form a Bible study. It's funny how they keep on building community. Every time I look at them, I'm like, what's going on in this place? Just more and more. They're working on it, but yeah, we should. This is the start of it. So
yeah,
I actually think this is a good place to leave it. You got 5 minutes before you got to go wherever you got to go. So let's leave it here. The people are thirsty. They're thirsty for it. I'm excited.
Do we know when we're doing the next one?
Up to Ed.
Yeah, I can. I already blocked off next Friday.
Okay.
I blocked off a couple hours to do it. But let me just say, in my last bit of the commercial, here's what you guys are going to get. I just want to tell the audience, this is what you guys are going to get. You're going to get a deep dive into a lot of stuff. There's no stone unturned. I'm going to talk about all the controversies. I'm going to talk about the rapture. I'm going to talk about the four horsemen. And I guarantee you, there are some areas there that you are going to completely disagree with me on, because there are going to be things that you may have never heard before. My take on the rapture, I think, is fairly unique. I believe the four horsemen are something different than what everyone else thinks it is. We're going to talk about the Gog Magog war, which I didn't know was as controversial as it actually is. But when I did my my series on it, I got more comments on that than any place else, because people think that, you know, it's Russia invading Israel. I don't think it's that at all. The millennium, is there a millennium? When, you know, why don't people believe that Jesus is going to rule for 1,000 years? Why don't they want him to rule for 1,000 years? So we're going to get into all that. We're going to get into what the mark of the beast is, which, and again, I think I have a unique take, but I have a different take on that. So what I'm going to guarantee you is it's going to be an exciting ride. It's going to make you think. And here is the test. Don't believe anything I say unless you research it yourself. That is about, if you just take what I say and run with it, you fail the course.
I actually go a step further. Whenever it comes to things that I say in particular, I always temper it to the audience. If you believe without researching what I say, then you're just as retarded as I am. And so I think that you put it much more elegantly, but I'm very excited, man. I can't wait to start going down this path. And I feel like I need to scramble now to try to understand some things and do some homework until the next episode.
You've got 30 years of being forced to go to like Bible study, and you can do that in a week.
To do in 1 week.
In one week. Good luck.
Well, I'm just going to come back next week just shaking.
Yeah. If you want a head start, just go to faithbyreason.net. Everything's there in long form. But if you want to just get your appetite whetted for this, then, you know, come back next week, and we'll do it in a shorter form. And if you want to take a deeper dive, it's all the information is there for you. Like I said, 60 episodes.
Absolutely. Listen, definitely. If you're not listening to his episodes after this, you have also failed. Come back next week. And Monday, we're going to be on with Dr. Narco Longo. I don't know if that's live.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be on. Yeah, we are going to be on Dr. Narco Longo. I don't know if that's live, but yeah, we'll be there Monday. And then I know we'll have probably Tuesday, an F to America. And then we'll figure it out.
All right, Ed, thank you so much again. And we'll see you next week. Peace out, guys.
The greatest hypnotist on planet Earth is a oblong box in the corner of the room. It is constantly telling us what to believe is real. If you can persuade them that what they see with their eyes is what there is to see, you got them. Because they'll laugh in the face of an explanation that portrays the bigger picture of what's happening. And they have.